You've entered the Kill Zone.
The Kill Zone.
Frontline Gaming presents the Kill Zone Podcast. Real talk for competitive Kill Team 40K. Tactics. Strategy. And news you need to know from some of today's top players. Tune in every other week for brand new episodes of the Kill Zone Podcast.
You're listening to the Killzone Podcast on the Frontline Gaming Network, which, by the way, you should go buy one of their mats so we can retire in the nice, the Bahamas or something like that, of all that that revenue there. But until that happens, this podcast is your home for real talk for competitive Kill Team. My name's Chris. Some folks call me Beerinid, and I'm joined by Emmanuel Mitsinikos from Strategic Advantage on YouTube, which you should go subscribe to him right now because he's one half of what's going to be, hopefully, the best episode we've ever done so far. We've got a great show coming up today.
Today we're talking about breaking Kill Team into minigames. Are you ready to level up as a player? No matter what your skill level is, honestly, today's episode probably contains the most actionable material we've ever given help out for people to level up. Today you receive a compass to guide you through the entire game, no matter what team you play.
Ooh, so stay tuned because all that is coming your way after we pay some bills with these messages.
Mooney the monkey, you're back?
And you're wearing a polo shirt. Wait, is that the Shapeways logo? Don't you work for Pop Goes the Monkey?
Ooh. Wait, don't give that pamphlet to Chris. I'll take it. I speak monkey. Wait, this is in English. Okay, fine, Chris. You can read it this time.
Alrighty, what do we have here? Killzone fans, don't worry if you missed the Orktober sale or if you're a filthy loyalist. There's a sale for you now through the end of the year.
Really? Wow. I want... Give me that. I want more Pop Goes the Monkey bits. Let me see that. Oh, wow. It goes on to say that if you spend over $100 on their Shapeways storefront for Pop Goes the Monkey, you get free shipping. Just use the promo code PGTM free ship at checkout. All one word.
Oh, that's such a neat deal. There are so many cool bits that they offer, and you can easily spend up to $100. Also, what a great way to get some cool holiday shopping done, eh?
That is such a good point. Actually, last year I bought some stuff off of Pop Goes the Monkey for my buddy Alex for Christmas. Wait. My fat thumb was covering something at the bottom here. Also, international fans of the show and the shop, this promo code works for you too.
What? Okay, so hold on. Free international shipping? That's pretty amazing. What a generous deal from Pop Goes the Monkey. We'll include a link to the Shapeways storefront in the description below.
And don't forget to check out the main site, popgoesamonkey.com, for other bits and bobs that are not 3D printed.
Thanks, as always, for sponsoring the podcast, Mr. Monkey. And we're back! Another singing intro today!
I think this is going to become a trend. We're going to have to write out lyrics. We're going to have to put a backing track. We'll get some oohs and ahs for some background singers. This is going to be great. Yeah. If we don't retire from selling mats for Frontline Gaming, then maybe we can just start our own duo here.
Yes, we'll start that. No, I've just been so excited about these past couple episodes, and you know, today especially, I'm just like, wow, this is one I'm really excited for. I think it's going to help a lot of people out.
Yeah, it's super fun stuff, and it really jives with my whole mentality that I have on Strategic Advantage, where I like capsule episodes that persist past the time of recording, because faction breakdowns, I love doing faction breakdowns. I love giving tips and tricks because those are also relevant. Even if you don't play those factions, it can help you kind of learn how to make the bread by seeing how we're combining ingredients. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I really love these kind of broad stroke episodes that really teach you how to get in the mindset of what a competitive player actually thinks about. But getting caught ahead of the horse.
Yes.
How you doing with your hobby, bud?
So I actually, funnily enough, I was kind of excited to talk to you about this. I have an interesting thing that I now get to reset the clock for. Those of you that listen, you know that Mr. Emmanuel has an affinity for the game Legion, Star Wars Legion.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He mentions it quite a bit. And we have this running joke that reset the clock every time that Emmanuel mentions it. I'm resetting the clock because a buddy has a whole army. I have an airbrush, and I'm going to try and help him do some of his stuff for, it's the new faction. It's the Shadow.
Oh,
you know what this is.
Yeah.
The bad guys.
I have two. Yeah. Well, mercenaries.
They're bad guys.
It's
right.
Mercenaries. You got the.
I pikes. Read Shadows of the Empire. They're the bad guys.
Oh my goodness, what's the faction called? I have two,
like Shadow
of the
Collective,
set.
Right?
Yes, that's what it is. I have two of the core starter box. I have an extra Mandalorian, the Super Commandos box. Well, they're technically non-Imperial Super Commandos. They're just the Mandalorian Commandos. The ones that were kind of Clone Wars era under the whole crime syndicate of Darth Maul. So I have Darth Maul and all of that. Gar Saxon, I have him. I have the whole box. I was ready to do all of that stuff, and then Into the Dark gets dropped. I was like, well, this is going to take my attention away. But they're all still in their shrink wrap in a cardboard box in the closet. Oh, don't tell my wife. But yeah, so you're gonna have at that set, huh?
Yeah, there's a bunch in there. I got Din Djarin and some Grogu's. There's some Darth Maul's I'm excited for. I think he's like the coolest baddie in Star Wars.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, all those guys. A bunch of pikes stuff.
Yes.
Some speeder bikes.
So he even went for the vehicles too. I didn't get the swoop bikes. Swoop bikes. This is a KOTOR reference that you're going to dig with the whole swoop bike. Chris and I bonded over our love for Knights of the Old Republic. So you're gonna enjoy those swoop bike racers. I actually saw a really cool kitbash of this. We've completely gone away from Kill
yes.
Team in this hobby section. That's fine. Poor academic Chris is sitting there in the Discord, reset the clock, reset the clock, reset
yes,
the clock, because he's listening to this because the segment keeps going on. But I saw someone actually kitbashing a Wookiee warrior as a swoop bike racer using a bunch of green stuff, because green stuff is great for gap filling, but it's also great if you're doing fur because it's so forgiving, because you just do little clumps and just kind of pull them until they come off at little peaks, and it's so easy to do fur with green stuff. Ben from Battle Brothers Tabletop, a really fun YouTube channel, if you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. He liked Kill Team and he likes to talk about it. That's his catchphrase. But he has actually a very good green stuff episode. I guess you can call it episode video. I guess that's what you call episodic content on YouTube.
Yes.
Oh, that's an old man's yells at cloud moment. But
yeah, you guys,
specifically on green stuffing fur with how he does it. And he gets great results because he puts turbans on everyone because everyone's Vestroian apparently, and beards on everyone because beards are cool. But he does fur and hair really well with his green stuff. And he has a video on that. So anyway, I digress. I saw someone make a swoop bike racer Wookiee, and it's phenomenal because with they did such a great job with the sculpt because of the dynamics of it being in motion with the fur getting blown back. It was just super impressive. And not to throw shade at Star Wars Legion, but this is not throwing shade at all, but there's a lot of newer players to wargaming entirely. We don't see much of that in Kill Team, because there's a lot of veterans that are coming back that used to play Warhammer of big 40K, the bigger version.
Yeah.
Or players who are dipping their toes into it from other war games or whatever. But Star Wars, that IP, brings in so much new blood that oftentimes the hobby that you see in social media for Star Wars Legion tends to be people getting their brushstrokes for the first time. Right.
Okay.
Learning how to. And unfortunately, so many of them have clones or stormtroopers. So these poor new painters are painting white as their first paint. They're like, how did I do? It's like, oh, thin your paints. But how? Then nothing goes on the model. And it's anyway, I digress. So every once in a while, you do see like a Warhammer transplant or someone with a lot of experience doing some hobby with Star Wars Legion. So I'm excited for you to get your hands on those models, because there's some really cool sculpts in there.
Yeah, they're super neat. So how about you? What you been up to with hobby stuff lately?
Well, as we talked about in the last episode, I did my I finished my Pop Goes the Monkey Bits using the Orc Boys and making my pirate orcs. My Orctober project. And then in addition to that, I made a display board for it. Tim, who you know, we've seen him at many comps. He was piloting Harlequins at the recent team tournament, but also at LVO. and his buddy Whopper, who a lot of people know from the Discords, they make these display boards, and they're honestly really cool. They're 3D printed. They worked with me to put together something that was unique to the Galadark, and they threw in a bunch of free 3D printed, like, orky pirate just pirate stuff, like treasure chests and cannons and all that kind of stuff to adorn it. And it has little slots for all the whole army. It has slots for all of the for the three barricades in the front. So it's a nice kind of cohesive, and the pattern is evocative of the Galadark, like the grid that you see on the bottom. So it kind of fits with that, and it fits with the Necromunda bases that I use, the same kind of coloring and shading I did. So they kind of all kind of blend in. So I got that finished up, and I had a lot of fun with that. I learned that the original Gorilla Glue is great for gluing stuff down, especially mounting stuff, but it expands so much. I had to file down so much of this because the original Gorilla Glue is not a CA glue. I don't even know what kind of glue it is, but it expands into crevices. So if you kind of really kind of rough up a surface, it gets a really good bond. But because it expands like three times, it starts filling out the sides. I'm thankful I put it to dry on a piece of cardboard because it stuck to the cardboard. Cut it away. Uh-oh. If I had left it on my mat, it would have been glued down to my mat, my painting mat. Anyway, so I got that done. I put in a lit little table war box. I was really happy with that. And I've set my sights on a new kill team goal. Because with Baby, I'm not going to number one ITC anytime soon because I'm not going to enough competitions to rack up those points. But my goal is to number one hobby track for the Southern California circuit for the squad games tournament circuit. Dakota, mm-hmm. who runs that, also has a podcast of the same name. Wow, I am just throwing shout outs left and right today. But he has a hobby track that he kind of like what you see in Warhammer 40K and Age of Sigmar, where there's like a whole hobby competition at the same time as you're doing the regular competition. And he's graciously allowing me to submit for hobby track, even at the tournaments that I can't go to, as long as I show up with my team, he'll score for the hobby track as well. So I'm really excited. With one more score, I think I'll be number one for hobby track in Southern California. And I'm going to keep expanding on this diorama because I didn't have time in October to do my pirate orky ship, the kit bash of the techno dwarves from the Caradron Overlords.
Arcanauts or whatever they are.
I have their like $150 like ship, their airship that I'm going to turn into a freebooter's spaceship. I already have I have everything. But anyway, so I'm going to keep jumping the shark and jumping that jumped shark to try and make sure that I pump that score as high as I can to get and maintain that number one spot for hobby track for this season.
And then,
that's my hobby.
Yeah, and you're jumping sharks with pirates, you know. It's on brand.
Yarr.
It's on brand. So let's get into today's episode, yeah? I think, why don't you get us started and tell us kind of what people can expect from today?
Yeah. So we're talking about Kill Team as a series of mini games, as the avid listener will likely have seen from the title of the podcast that they tapped on. And Kill Team in general is just a really complex game when it comes down to the actual game itself, like playing the game. It's much more straightforward than Kill Team 2018. let's at least call that out. But it can still be pretty complex. And I actually learned this the hard way because my dad the other about a week ago, he said, "So what is it? What is this thing that you do your YouTube and your podcast? What is this game?" And I tried to distill the game down to something that my father could understand. And he's like, "Wait, what?" And I was like, "Whoa, there's actually this game is a lot more complex than we give it credit for." But I mean, you have some rules inside the core rules that take some time to master, like line of sight. Then you have your own faction rules that take time to master. And depending on the faction, that can be a small task like intercession, or a huge task like Pathfinders, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you're jumping into the game now, like a lot of players are doing with Into the Dark and the new starter box, you also have all these other factions to learn. Yeah. It's not just Compendium, Commandos, Vet Guard, and then a feed of factions over the year as it goes on. So if you're jumping in now, it's actually pretty overwhelming. we're pretty soon going to outpace the compendium with bespoke teams and specialist teams, right? And each of those teams have their own gimmick, their own rules, et cetera, et cetera. And even for a vet player, I mean, what happened when the annual dropped? That was five teams all at once.
Right.
And then Shadow Vaults comes out a month after. There's a lot to keep up with. And the game keeps getting more and more complex. The more you add teams, the more there is to consider about how you work into that team, how that team works into other teams, how that team interacts with the new game mode that we have. So you can easily get outpaced. But if you take all of that overwhelming amount of complexity that I just threw down there and boil it down, the game's just about getting points, right?
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is trying to get points. Points win games, but they don't just come from one source. And it's not just like, it's not basketball, right? Not even it's not soccer where ball goes into the net, ball goes into the goal, you get 1 point. Basketball, 2 points and 3 points. It's more like cricket, where I don't even think players who play cricket fully understand the rules of cricket and where all the points come from. So when you realize that there's so many different ways to score points and then deny points and how that means, then it can get overwhelming. And that's the part where Kill Team gets its most complex. But today's episode is all about breaking down that myriad of sources of points and ways to success on the board into small little menu games that are easy to digest. I mean, high level players already intuitively do this, but I have to admit, I didn't realize I was doing this until Chris explained this concept to me. And had I heard everything that we're going to be talking about today, when I was a budding new player, I probably would have accelerated my growth tenfold rather than stumbling into this on my own without even realizing I was doing it. So in a very long form way to condense the episode of kind of what we're doing here, it's bringing all that complexity down to easy to digest tasks that will bring you success and victory.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because I am very fortunate in being able to do coaching with people. And in 2020, the beginning of the year, something very interesting happened. The world shut down and people moved from playing in person to playing online. And we streamed these games and we watched these games. And it was like a couple years almost of every time that I wanted to, I could get on my phone and watch a game being played. Right. And a very interesting thing happened there with what I would see was Kill Team happening to people. There was people not knowing what to do, people not knowing the other army. They'd get to places and there was no kind of structure to the game. And at the same time, I was watching like the AI beat StarCraft players. Google made an AI to destroy chess players and StarCraft players and things like that.
I never really heard about that.
Yeah, so I got this idea from watching people play very high-level StarCraft, where basically what they did is they broke this game down into mini-games in terms of build timings. Like, basically, by W time, there needs to be X resources so you can build Y, which finishes at Z, which now allowed them to expand by leaving the base at A time, arriving at B time. Now that second command center's built. It's amazing.
I remember this kind of way for high-level play for StarCraft, and it's exactly why I bounced off of StarCraft. So it's funny that I then get so invested in Kill Team, which you're gonna tie together is exactly the same thing.
Absolutely. And you know what's interesting? It goes back to that episode we did as Kill Team is a self-improvement exercise. If you guys haven't heard that, go back and listen, because in this example, what they were doing in StarCraft, they're not stressing about beating X player. Oh my God, you know, this is what's going on. They're just more or less working to refine their own build order timing. And this is the difference between the beginner and the pro a lot of times and stuff. And, you know, the computer that's now smashing humans that have been playing this for 20 years. It was they got it down to like precise, refined things in their game. And so I got to start putting this out there with people, not only in my own games, but getting to see what they could do with it.
So you're saying that someone created an AI that was programmed to efficiently build up an army to destroy humans? Did they create Skynet?
Google. Funnily enough, Google was hard at work for a little bit, and that's what came out of it. So,
that's funny.
So, we have some mini games for new players. Do you want to tell them what that is? Like, so when you're first starting out, what can they think of, you know?
Yeah, because as we alluded to, like, this is relevant to both newer players as well as advanced players. It's better to start off if you're new to the game by taking something small and focusing on a goal. And the astute listener and the fan of the podcast will pick out some of the stuff that I'm going to say and say, oh, that's kind of like the advice that Chris and Emmanuel gave when they said, how can I find success or give a goal to myself as a new tournament player getting into the scene? So it's going to tie to a lot of that. And there's a reason for that, because we're kind of hinting at giving yourself small, easy to digest goals to focus on, because that's how you grow as a newer player. But
yeah. And I was just going to say really quickly, I think that it's really important to state here, what we're doing is we're saying to you, if you win enough of these mini games, you win the bigger game. So we take this big game, we break it into little bite-sized chunks, and you're not going to win every one of them. That's okay. But if you win more than the other guy or gal on the other side of that board, you do win the game. It's just by proxy.
And the other important thing about understanding the basics is that this is how it helps. Like, once we talk about the more complex approach, specifically army kind of type relevant, these examples play into understanding why each team will take a different approach towards our path to victory to win each of these mini games. Absolutely. So just beating around the bush a little bit, but getting into it, the examples are scoring a primary close to your DZ, right? That should come intuitively as a very simple thing to do. And most new players are going to be able to see the objective that's closest to them, that's easily hidden, and say, I'm going to go stand on it and pump it for victory points. But that's a mini game. You can consider that an easy mini game, but it's a mini game. Number two, expand to a new primary objective, right? Meaning, okay, you have the one. Now let's move on to another one. Let me get two. Let me find another one that I can get to. Score attack off, like one of your secondaries, right?
Yes.
That's another source of your points. Some get up on a soapbox and say that's a third of your points. into the dark, it might even be half of your points on some of these missions. So scoring attack off, number three. And then number four, denying an enemy player a primary point or attack off. Minus one to your opponent is just as good as plus one to you, when it just matters who has more at the end, right? And the order that I put those out is deliberate, because that goes from easy to hard.
Right.
The mission objectives tend to be very straightforward. The secondaries tend to be a little bit more complex. Sometimes not, most of the time they are. So those are always going to be that escalating closer DZ, close to your DZ, further out, secondary. But then the most complex part of this is denying your opponent, because that requires you to understand what their plan is, understand what their source of points are, understand what their secondaries might be if you haven't seen them yet, or what they are and how you're going to deny them while not forfeiting points of your own. And if you approach that from simple to hard, each turning point you're looking at the board, okay, simple, I can keep my DZ one. A little bit more complex, I can expand. A little bit more complex, which tac ops can I do? Finally, more complex, how can I deny it? Every turning point, every activation, you go through that checklist. If I've already accomplished one, move on to the next, move on to the next. These are the different kind of silos of mini games that you're playing and having a focus on while you're playing each turning point. And then it adds up to points. And this is where all your points are going to come from. This is what the path is to lead to your victory.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get into a more advanced approach. Like when it gets to the archetype specific, a lot of this stuff you're going to see, like, for example, you were talking about a moment ago that it leads from easier to harder. Well, with that harder, we want you to know what that is. And that now starts to get into archetype specific things, which is great because we just covered archetypes last episode, right?
Coincidentally.
Yes. So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, what the heck are you doing after you finish this episode? Go get caught up since it was fresh content, you know. But briefly, elites are small, durable, you know, kind of flexible teams. They want shooting a melee on the same guy. Hordes are kind of wide, frail, and generally inflexible teams. You see a hard lean, like maybe they're a full shooty horde or a full melee horde with maybe a couple little sprinkle flagship kind of models just in there. And you look at elites, which are, you know, you think of things like Eldar or Novitiates, things like that. They're kind of a mix of the two. And it's important to know this as you're listening, because we're talking about elite-specific minigames and horde-specific minigames. Well, guess what? The elite is going to be the opposite of what they're facing this round. So they act like a horde if they're going against something chunkier than them. They act like an elite team if they're going against a spammy horde. So you know, it's like you'll learn and use both of these if you play an Elite kind of middling team. So the first thing to understand with Elites and Hordes, you know, also is something I call the primary true max. So this is basically, there's a general point to start with a game and tweak your team, basically, where you assume, like, say, only two on primary in the first half with your Elite teams, because you're probably not going to go and stand on three objectives in this, you know, with this archetype, right, in round one. So you'd be okay with, like, one for each of those rounds, aka two in the first half, which is your true max for that half. So it's stuff like that, you know, and that leads to eight on primary, not nine. And you know now, oh, that's okay. I don't actually have to score 18 points with these guys, stuff like that. But cart getting ahead of the horse.
So let me back that up a little bit, because you did skate through that pretty quick. So what you're saying is with certain teams, more often than not with elite teams, your goal is not max score, whether it's right. 18 or 20 if hobby is included. You need to analyze your situation and say, okay, realistically, my first two rounds, as we discussed in our previous episode, I'm not focusing on primary. I might be doing secondaries and simplifying the board state, right? Yes. So I'm not going to be able to get max points on primaries. I'm not going to get that 12 over the course of the entire game. That's realistically not going to happen. So what's my true max score? And in order to win, I just need to make sure that my opponent's less than that, right? So right. that's what you're saying is your true max is yeah. what realistically is my path to the victory going to take me? Because if I try and max turning point one and two to get 12 points on primaries, I'm not going to be left with enough bodies to actually get that 12 in turning points three and four. I'm going to burn that candle too quick.
Yes, you said that perfectly, much better than I did. So yes, the thing about it is that this now you understand, okay, this is the actual goal I'm trying to hit with the elite mm-hmm. team. We can start at the end and work backwards, like how you get there, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. mini game, one of them you're trying to do, I would say, is deploy to threaten objectives with ranged models. Mm-hmm. You want to be pointing, because if you're going against a horde or something, they're really trying to have a big turn one, a big turn two, and drown you out of this game. You're trying to threaten where they're going to go. So mini game for you is deploying to threaten those objectives. So you're thinking your turn one in deployment. You are one of your mini games threatening that objective just with placement. Boop. So I'm either going to be right there looking at it from the beginning, or able to move there and look at, you know, where they're most likely going to try to move to with a couple guys. And that's going to accomplish a lot of things. Could be killing models before they can score. It's also simplifying that board state, as Emmanuel just said.
Yeah. So it's almost like with those four initial steps that we gave to the beginning player, your primary focus is actually the end of that, where you're right. denying your opponent. And that's what I was alluding to, where the different archetypes don't care about simple to more complex, because it is a very complex approach to say, okay, well, my goal is to deny points this round. It's not as easy as saying loot and salvage. I go and I loot, I get a point, right?
Right.
I need to be in my opponent's mind. So it's more complex, but that's a primary goal of the elite team in the early game, in the early turning points. And the way you accomplish that is by creating situations where those points are threatened. They're not safe. You're ignoring exactly. your own points and maybe trying to keep pace so you're not falling too far behind. Like you said, maybe get one. You're not going to be getting mm-hmm. 3 points, but you maybe get one or two. But your mm-hmm. focus is to simplify the board state, as we've both said at this point, by also denying your opponent points.
Yes. So it's like, okay, you're going to double tap some intercessors and kill stuff. You're kind of specific on who you want that to be. You know, mm-hmm. It's things that are going to kill you or things that are going to score mm-hmm. points, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the thing. The next thing I would say is oftentimes you're choosing scouting option number two, not every time, but oftentimes, again, these are general, to be used on a ranged model deployed to score that primary. So now we talked about getting to that primary.
Floppy.
Yes. Well, we talked about number two, right? Mm-hmm. Is first you're trying to score that objective in your DZ. The next is getting out, you know, mm-hmm. onto something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really good to be able to fall back if stuff starts to go bad and you have a safe thing back home. But mm-hmm. using, you know, the ability to like move, dash, or something like that, get onto a point and still have the option to shoot somebody or do Overwatch later or something like that is a really interesting mini game to have on these guys. So a lot of times you're choosing that scouting option to be able to, if it, you know, if the opportunity arises, shoot with that guy who would also be scoring, because that now fits in the flex mindset, right? Somebody who's contributing output while standing on a point. I would say the next one would be to score at least one objective close to your DZ with the model above, often done as the last move of round one for you. You know, I think that that's a good mini game because you move him out too quick. They still have all their guns and stuff. This is a mistake I see a lot of times. Like, I'll be playing kind of autopilot with Tau, and all of a sudden it's like the shark, you know, there's blood in the water, and I'm not even aware of what it is yet. It's like, oh, wait, wait, hold on. It snaps me out, and I start looking at the board, and I'm like, ah, there it is. Too soon. He moved to that point too soon. Now I'm going to be able to go get that guy. So your mini game, a lot of times, this guy we just talked about who's able to flippy flap, he's the guy you've deployed to go get onto a point. He's usually your last move in turn one, if possible. You're trying to, you know, let them do some stuff first. And then what's really interesting, mini game for the first three rounds, if you can, would be to kill four enemy models if going against hordes. It's not going to happen every round, but especially in the first two, if you can, that's a full third usually of a horde team, or a full, let me see, 66%, right? Because if there are 12 models, you'd be killing four and four. That's only, you know, that's one guy double tapping, one guy double tapping against five up saves. You can do that, but it heavily works towards what we talked about with simplifying the board state. So if you're getting four kills round one and four kills round two, that's also leading to the next mini game that we're talking about, which is max two kill base secondaries in the first half of the game. So you're going down on primaries in this first half, but you're hopefully maxing two of your secondaries. And I think that this kind of rounds out the elite.
And the important thing to recognize about that is the game's about resources, right? CP and action points, right? If you're expending action points early on to do secondaries, tac ops, those action points are then free later to score primaries, whether it's like loot and salvage, that kind of stuff. You can move double tap or move loot shoot, right?
Yes.
So you got to think of it as I'm not spending that APL now because it's to do primaries, because by focusing on my tac ops, which are killy, will simplify the board state, which will then usher me into primaries later on. And exactly. It just kind of goes along with the demeanor. So again, just to kind of reflect back on those four key concepts with elites, you're going to be focusing on the fourth one, which is simplifying the board state, denying your opponent scoring by, you know, killing them.
Yeah.
their opponent's models, not your opponent. Don't crump them. We do not endorse that on the Killzone podcast.
Yes.
Then by focusing on your tac ops and focusing on maybe one, you're easy to score primary.
Yeah.
And then you shift towards doing all four in the late game once you've simplified everything and you pretty much ushered your way to victory. But you've made it sound pretty terrible for hordes going up against the elite at this point. I'm going to sideline myself again for you to talk about hordes, because you are the king of hordes with all of your experience with Pathfinder. So does the horde do what the elite did, but in their way? Like, how does the horde focus on their win condition to get all their points?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing, remember we talked about with the elites, is that true max on their primaries. With the hordes, it's a secondary true max. So you're not expecting a lot of times to max all of your secondaries. Oftentimes I see people take an iffy third and go for that, and it stops them from maxing any of them. You know, like they extend too much to get too many tac ops, get wrecked on, you know, something over here, and now they don't max any of them. So what you're a lot of times trying to do with a horde is max two and maybe get 1 point on your third, which would be a true max of five on that, maybe four. And it's going to be, you know, different to whatever your game plan is and your thing. But just think of it like your true max would be four, kind of is the
for
way
your
to do
tech
that.
Ups, yeah.
Right. With primary, what's interesting is you often see it reduced by one each round, depending on what you started with. So if you get 4 points round one on primary through attrition, next round you typically get less. You know, you've rushed out there, you've got on four objectives, rah, you've used CP, all this stuff. Next round, you don't have all that. So you're getting like three. You've lost some guys. Next round, you're getting like maybe two, something like that. And the next round, it's the last round of the game. It's like, uh-oh, can I just deny? Like we talked about, you know, which you pointed out earlier. Can I just get on that point, compress, or something like that? Because you might not get any primary, and that's kind of okay for the horde who's kind of running out of gas at that point.
Yeah, I mean, on our last episode, you talked about winning games when you got tabled with Pathfinders.
Yes.
And that's because of this early rush, focus on primaries, getting all of your points out while you still have the bodies because you know that they're going to get filtered out.
Yeah, and then it's totally within the realm of possibility. I might be charging rail rifle dedicated gunners into melee to compress and hold points and stuff, which people just still don't expect, but it's focusing on that win condition. All right, so dedicated mini games for the Horde. Deploy for scoring the primary, and I have this written 3x plus exclamation mark. So 3 times or more with an exclamation mark, because it's super important. Like if you're not getting 3 points or 4 points turn one as the Horde, you may have just lost this game turn one, because you run out of gas, the board state stalls, and then the other guys are able to come back and you haven't pushed it far enough at that point. So you deploy to score 3 primaries. If it takes tac ops, if you got to use dashes once per game or something like that, a lot of times this is okay. But at least this is your mini game. Deploy so that turn one, you get on 3x plus exclamation mark. Three or more. Yeah.
When you first said that, I was just like, I wasn't ready for math today.
No, no. But it's hopefully something people remember. It's Birnid's equation. 3x plus exclamation mark. So what you're going to do now, but your next one, see, a lot of this is in deployment because so much of the Horde minigame is early. So deploy to score 2 secondaries, round one. Because again, you're trying to burn through this, you know, the fuel that you have that's available to you as early as possible, because you don't know what's going to happen with 5-up saves and 7 wounds and stuff against, you know, double, triple tapping bolters and things of that nature that's out there. So deploy to score 2 secondaries. Often we talked about scouting option 2 for the elite team. You're choosing scouting option 3 a lot of times to zoom further out. Right. You're trying to zoom to that further point turn one and get something that may not be available to you later on. Like if it's a tagging mission like loot, you're trying to tag one the opponent is thinking that they have. Right. So it's like, here's this elite team that's like, oh, I'm only going to get this one objective this round. And you just worthy cause tag. It's mine. You can't get it this round or something. And that guy just dies a horrible death, but that could be I just won the game, move one of the game. You know, it's something that people don't expect. And you see the soul leave their body sometimes. you know, it's something good.
Hopefully not to Slaanesh.
Yes. so that could be a mini game, right? If it's a tagging mission like loot, you're trying to tag one the opponent is thinking they have first thing out of the gate. Because now you've disrupted their whole system. You've put them behind. You've widened the gulf even further. And it helps you there. The next I would say is look at your true max and what's the soonest you can score that. Because that becomes your next mini game. For example, I know with Tau, I need 14 points with my Pathfinders by the end of turn 3. And if I'm not there, I know I'm off track and I know by exactly how many. And that now completely changes my disposition in this game. Like if I'm way, if I'm ahead of that, I'm like, soup, I suck back in, like give them nothing, no kill-based secondaries, no anything like that. Like I reinforce my position. But if I'm behind, it's gambling time. I'm taking like naked shots without any marker lights or buffs or CP or anything. Like I'm rolling dice. I'm trying to get lucky because if I get lucky, I need it to get lucky big at this point. And now I can, I know if I haven't reached this benchmark, the game's lost. So it's like, oh shit time, roll dice. Kind of, you know, and get it done. Yeah. And I think that that would be where I would think with Horde mini games.
And then we come to E-Lights.
Yeah, your wheelhouse.
Yeah, you reference this a little at the drop of this, but they're the redheaded middle children of this situation, right? They just try to get attention where they can. And if they don't want to flex into the same game plan as someone else. It gets a little funky if it's an Elite into an Elite, right? Because then what do you do? Well, you have to kind of look at where your strengths are as your team. Hopefully it's not a mirror match. If it is, well, then you probably both have the same plan and go for it. Whoever has hotter dice or better tactical mind is going to win. But if you're going up into an Elite army, remember, hey, they really, really don't care about primaries in the first round. They really want to condense and simplify the board state by killing my model. So I need to make sure that I'm not leaving primary points on the table, but I also need to straddle the line because I don't want to get simplified either. I don't have spare bodies like a Horde team does. I have 9, 10, maybe 11, but the extra body that's getting me to 11 is not really a significant operative, right? So I don't want to get simplified because I also need to be strong into the mid game. I need that three, four to have some lingering presence as an Elite team against elites. Then if you flip it and you're going up against Horde, well, you know, they're going out for the primary points. So deploying away where you want to make sure that you have oversight over those objectives. There's a good chance they might out activate you, but they can't do that on all of the objectives. So you're going to get some shots off on some people and deny them those points. Or if you can't deny them those points, you'll at least have someone in a position where the next turning point, you can start to simplify them a little bit more on those points and deny their primaries on the second round, right? But then you also want to focus on not getting too far behind on primaries because you don't have the same staying power as an elite team, right? So you need to dip your toe into both of these. So if you're an elite team, it's super important that you understand everything that Chris just said. Because you need to do all of that. Yeah. And that's why you actually find a lot of very competitive players playing either Hordes or Elite teams. You don't see too many of them picking up Elite teams. Because I feel like Hordes, that those early points, that's really good. Especially if you don't get into a fourth round, right? If it's diced down at a tournament and you're not finishing that fourth round, well, you're a Horde team, you scored all your points already, right?
Right.
And an Elite team can really flex very well into whichever opponent they have, but it's really challenging to do that. So there's really not much to say more about Elites because it really is just depending on who you're going into, how you act, and you already covered that very well.
Yeah, there's just so many more mini games to kill, team. And, you know, hey, maybe you guys could even make some up. Put a link, you know, we always ask questions on the podcast on the anchor link. So maybe let us know if there's something that you're doing every game that maybe we can add to our games. So, yeah, here's the patent pending end of the episode, rapid fire time. Want to join in with me on this one, Emmanuel?
Yeah, it sounds fun. Let me try my feet at this to see if I could do the classic beer and rapid fire. Barricades. Analyzing your opponent's plan as well as your own, reacting to their barricades, it's a whole mess of 4D chess meets rock, paper, scissors that can sometimes get pretty complex. But the barricade game, that could be your mini game.
Absolutely. Yeah, perfect. And then there's like, what about scouting phase, right? Getting in your opponent's mind to take initiative? What? Like, maybe you don't take anything other than what makes you go first this game, because that's right. What you need right now. That's definitely something you can do. Or focus on the one scouting option you need to execute your key game winning turn one plan, or baiting your opponent's deployment with the intent of dropping a third barricade. What? Or hey, maybe it's End of the Dark, right? Where you can place a barricade to mess with the placement of another person's barricade. What?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And speaking of deployment, make sure this is deliberate. Don't just put guys on just because, hey, you know, this is where he's going to go because whatever. Make sure everyone's got a plan. And even if that model's plan is to make your opponent think like they have a plan to influence their deployment to react to yours, so another model has a plan that they didn't anticipate. Oh my goodness. So many mini games, so many mind games with that. List goes on.
Yeah. All right. Enough of that. You all get the idea. Any of those rapid fire mini games sound neat, let us know and we can expand on them in a future episode, because this is all stuff that's still wide open and always still in development. So we hope you enjoyed today's episode. My name's Chris. You can find me on YouTube, BeerInid40K.
And I've been Emmanuel. You can find me at Instagram at eman.paints, and you can find me and my buddy Alex on YouTube at Strategic Advantage.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Killzone Podcast. Your home for real talk for competitive kill team. Brought to you by the Frontline Gaming Network. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.